Excellent. I want to reiterate what Tina said to some degree anyway, just to welcome everybody here. It's great to see everyone, and it's certainly great to see some of my many old friends in the audience. So, but right now we're going to talk about the successful implementation of connected lighting, and we have our esteemed panel with us today. And since we're running a little late on time, I'm kind of going to just jump into it because I think everyone in the room is familiar and probably deeply familiar with the state of our market today. We have a lot of room to grow in the area of transforming the market to use connected lighting technologies. And so our panel here today is going to talk about that together with me, and we're going to field some questions from you a little later in the session. So first, I'd just like to briefly introduce each of our panelists, and then I'm going to have each of them give a self-introduction so that you can learn a little more about them. Then we'll jump right to our topic. So on the far left of our stage, we have Naveed Khan, who's a technical services manager with Con Ed. And we have next to Naveed, Mark Hodges, who's the director of solutions and sales for lighting at Sonepar. And right here on my left is Elijah Ercolino, director of engineering and building systems at Boston University. So guys, welcome and thank you for being here. I'd like you each to take a minute to introduce yourselves and then we can get right to our conversation. So why don't we start on the far left with Naveed?
Sure.
And then we'll come across the stage. Thank you.
Good morning. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah.
Thank you. So my name is Naveed Khan. I work with the utility in New York City, Con Edison. I've been there for 5 years. I'm the technical services manager for the energy efficiency programs at Con Ed. And I work with a team that designs, implements, and manages the energy efficiency programs, sees it all the way through processing, and then we do the evaluations in-house. So it's a really, really pretty big operations we have going on there. The clean heat program, CNI program, all of our small business, multifamily customers, all of those programs we run in-house. So it's been a real special type of initiative that we have in-house over there, and really looking forward to the discussion today. Thank you.
Thank you. Mark?
Hey everybody, my name is Mark Hodges. I'm with Sonepar USA, and first of all, thank you for having me here. This is such a great treat to be in person with everybody and see everybody's smiling faces. So I work for Sonepar USA. We're the largest electrical distribution company in the world, and we have here in the US what we call operating companies. So we've got 14 operating companies across our entire, across the United States. Lighting and controls is one of our largest product categories. So my role is to engage with our operating companies and encourage them to invest in the resources on a local level to serve the market. And I'll say, you know, controls has been a challenge for us. It's been something I think we'll talk about today, but it's hard to understand what everybody's role is, and you get a lot of controls technologies thrown at you. So we've really made a point to I use the word standardization, to really become local experts with a select few of manufacturers, understanding that we can't be everything to everybody. So we've really tried to hone in on partnering up with the technology which we think is the most impactful, and then using that to serve our customers. So again, excited to be here, excited about the discussion. So I look forward to some Q&A from you folks, you as well.
Thank you. Good morning, everyone. My name is Elijah Ercolino. I head up the engineering group at Boston University, where I have mechanical, electrical, plumbing, and building automation. And for the past 10 years, I've designed, built, implemented the largest energy efficiency projects on our campus. A few years ago, we had the largest energy efficiency project in the portfolio of Eversource's portfolio, actually. So it was audited by all the correct folks to make sure that we're delivering the savings to the state. Maggie, I forget where, I lost track of you, but I would have been a great member on your team. Maybe think of me next time. But actually, I meant to thank you because I have a bunch of free time now. I'm coaching my kids' Little League, so I couldn't be happier. So I'm pleased to be here, not really from the technical perspective, I'm a trained mechanical engineer, but more from the end user's perspective. I think the state's goals of reaching those who are underserved is certainly admirable, And going for deeper savings is certainly great. I would make the challenge that until we get to small businesses, well, let me put it this way. With the supply chain issues, inflation prices, everything from diesel to construction costs in Boston, it's very difficult and expensive right now to do big projects. And if it's difficult for Boston University and other large organizations, you know how difficult it is for all the underserved, including small businesses. So just something to be aware about when we're continuing the discussion. Thank you.
Great. Thank you all. We have such a great combination of experiences and perspective here on the stage. This is really awesome. I was trying to think of a really good joke to start the day off with, like a utility program manager, a distributor, and an end user walk into a bar. But I couldn't come up with the rest of it. So Bernadette, if you have any ideas on how to finish that joke, please let us know, right? But anyway, back to connected lighting. We all like to talk about connected lighting, but I'm not so sure we all have a common picture of what that means to us when we talk about it. And I think it means different things to different people. Is it connected in the building, staying in the building locally? Is it connected to the cloud? I mean, what exactly is connected lighting and what does it mean to us? So I'd like to ask each of you to share your perspectives about connected lighting. And also, as you do that, please share with the group what it means to you, so that maybe by the time we reach the end of our day today, maybe part of our outcomes could be to establish some type of common definition or maybe even some options for common definitions of connected lighting in buildings. So Naveed, would you like to start?
Absolutely. So connected lighting from a utility perspective, it's a lot about listening to who our customers are. In those cases, we're talking about commercial customers, we're talking about our small business customers, in all types of areas. So connected lighting means to me, and there's a lot of discussion about equity here this week, which is amazing. It's about everybody having that opportunity to have some level of connection with their technology and some level of that network and communication. So from a utility perspective, we listen to our customers. We really want that level to be there. And working towards what that is and what that baseline is has been ever, changing. And for us, it's continuously changing. But it's not going to be, as Mark and I were talking yesterday, it's not necessarily going to be, all right, the Star Wars of everything. And, this is what, connected lighting, the best technology is always out there going to be. So just having that barrier to entry, lowering it for everybody to participate, I think having that is something that we're really, really trying to make sure that we're cognizant of and having that opportunity for all of our customers to be able to participate in connected lighting. So for us, it's everybody having that ability to leverage the connection with lighting and other types of systems, if possible, and giving them that lower barrier to entry so they can enjoy it.
Thank you. Mark, how about you?
Yeah, I'll echo his thoughts also. I think we have to kind of back up and look at LED technology and how disruptive, in a good way, it's been to the industry in a whole. And it's only been around for a very short time, so we don't fully know the impacts of that technology in our market. But what it has done is it's created a really big runway for controllability because of its inherent ease of control, but it's also added a lot of complexity. So I think, in my mind, connected lighting is really offering flexibility to your customers, to the space of where you're installing controls, and then education of that potential. And kind of what Naveed was saying, which I really like a lot, is, I think we sometimes have customers don't really know what they want, and they want a lot because they hear a lot. But in the end of the day, it's really listening to what their needs are and offering them a system that addresses it at that moment, but then also gives them a runway to be flexible and to upgrade as the technology progresses. So last point I'd make from a distributor's point of view, and I meant to say this earlier, in this room there's over 1,200 years of experience, a lot of really smart people, a lot of with technical engineering backgrounds, and I'm the typical distributor with a sales background, went to Ole Miss and I got a degree in business, so my I'm very fascinated by the technology, but I'm in awe of all y'all's experience. So I'm kind of trying to, my role here is to be more of the person that's in the trenches that gets the customers calling saying they have issues. So I think an area of focus for us is small to medium-sized opportunities. I think that's the bulk of the opportunity in the United States. Everybody wants to go to the big high profile project, which those are great and those are fun to work on, but there is a lot of opportunity in the small to medium sized market. So that's an area where we have started to focus and where we think we can add value.
Well, thank you for that. And by no means should we minimize your role. Your role is a very, very important role in our industry, and we're happy that you're there serving in that way. Elijah, would you like to share with us your perspectives about Connected
Yeah, Life? I mean, Mark, you probably have the biggest role to play, because from a technical point, there's lots of challenges, right? And business folks know how to get things done and how to package things and market things and sell things. And, you know, trained engineers or technical people tend to focus on, you know, standards and specifications. When I think of controls, I think of what it's lacking right now, right? We're as technical people, we're trained to look at how this is going to break or what's impeding progress and adoption, right? I think standards and specifications from controls are tricky and needed. And you know, there's a lot of confusion with how many vendors and choices there are, and which way to go. At Boston University, we support currently you know, more than a half a dozen wireless network lighting control, wired and wireless and hybrid lighting control systems, and that's kind of tricky. So I think to your point, when it comes, and I completely agree, when it comes to implementation of projects, the high profile is great, and boy, there's a lot of awards and articles written about that. But really, that doesn't scale, particularly in Boston. It's something like, if Massachusetts is anything like the normal construction industry right now, we have something like 0 to 3% is actually per year is actually new construction. It doesn't really. It's going to take us a while to get there if all we're doing is 1 to 3% of projects a year, in terms of technology shift from LEDs or from other technologies towards LEDs and controls. So I think retrofit is a huge market, and the small to medium, I think that's a huge territory for the future.
Would you consider that connected lighting?
Yes, absolutely.
So that's an interesting point that you made. You have about a dozen different systems.
Half a dozen
you're building. So are you, right now, are you working on trying to create like a common platform across all of them so that you can secure data and manage your loads across
That's
your
the
buildings?
Future me is doing that. The current me is trying to get the systems to work, and I'm not being facetious about that. I talked to Jim over at my table. And that's where DLC and the point of Luna and some others, in terms of standardization and in these connected lighting systems, and you know, what happens in the future if you have to replace a module, and you know, firmware rev ain't gonna work, right? You need to replace the whole thing because the device 8 years ago when it was manufactured, you know, wasn't capable of the future firmware rev. So what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to stabilize and modernize and get to a point where our connected lighting systems are built out enough and flexible enough for the future where we, Tina in her speech had a great quote or term, maybe you could mention it later, I forget exactly, but basically like demand reduction, but the diversity, what'd you call it, Tina, do you remember? Oh, so good. I should have wrote it down. But basically, the idea is in the future with load reduction and things like that, I think, you know, it's real-time pricing. That'll be a lot more important to especially large customers, reasonably large customers, to at an enterprise network scale, kind of tone everything down when you need to. But there's certainly, you know, myriad of you know, optimizations that can happen with the network lighting systems. Currently, we're trying, at Boston University, we're trying to train our staff. We're trying to understand local support. Love everyone from California. It's hard to sell into the Boston marketplace because, you know, if I got to call Jim when there's a problem, he's not going to like those long haul trips because I expect him to be there the next day. And so having qualified, good, well-trained, you know, I'm a college graduate, but I'm definitely advocate of sending kids, grandkids, parents, neighbors, recommending everyone to get in the trades. There's a lot of money to be made right now. Licensed electricians, controls folks, no college necessary. I'd hire folks who have intellectual curiosity and want to work with their hands and their and the tools right away. So those are some thoughts.
Excellent. Those are excellent points. Thank you. I'm curious a little bit, Naveed, about the market in New York City. There's a strong focus in New York on code compliance as well as all the plethora of local laws that have been passed through the years. How are the local laws influencing what your customers are asking for and the types of solutions that they're adopting in the New York City market? And is connected lighting part of the basket of solutions that either you're helping them to identify or that they're asking for?
Right. So in New York City, the codes are pretty strict over there, relatively speaking, with respect to the state, at the federal level, and internationally. It's pretty strict in New York City. So one of the things that we are doing right now, or actually what we're seeing, is that a lot of our customers, their first thought is to just do a replacement that just meets the code, or if they're going to do a lighting redesign, just do it so that it's the least intrusive method and practice that's available. One of the things that we're doing as a program is really working closely with our participating contractors, with DLC, with entities we can, to raise awareness for what the possibility is there to help drive the reduction in carbon and electricity. So, you know, with respect to everything that is happening very quickly too with the codes, we're actually seeing Local Law 97 that has already been passed, and it's going to start taking effect and going to have some severe penalties coming in within the next 2 years after the reporting period starts. And I know for a fact that that's going to be a huge driver in what types of technologies these larger buildings and even small businesses are going to start looking into to doing their upgrades. One of the biggest challenges we are seeing right now is the fact that our programs are only designed for paying above the code. So if they're doing a lighting redesign, any sort of customer, that going above code is just, it's not the type of, you know, funding right now and our uses for our funding that's gonna move the needle. So we really have to work a little bit closer with our state departments, with our regulatory agencies, to really rethink that approach. So I didn't mention this before, but I'm actually the co-chair for our New York State TRM committee that works very closely with our staff. And one of the things that we're always talking about is different ways for us to think about how do we use this funding in a way that's gonna really, really move the needle. And I think what we can do is like really make the case for, here's what our existing conditions are as a representative territory. Here's what we can really move the needle to if they were to implement these technologies. What does that new baseline for connected lighting really mean in certain territories and certain sectors? If we can really, really have a thought process around that and start categorizing it in a way that's easy for, you know, state officials to really grasp and go ahead and allocate the funding towards, I think that's going to really, really help us seriously move the needle.
It sounds to me then that something like that or an approach like that would be more of a customized approach per customer rather
Yes.
than a prescriptive solution. Is that right?
Absolutely. And I will say that what we have seen for our larger customers, energy monitoring and understanding what that persistence for the operations and inevitably the savings are, is something that our larger customers have access to, and they do. But some of our smaller customers that are in small to medium businesses or even tenant spaces in larger buildings, they don't have that same level of monitoring, and it's harder for us to really follow through and incentivize to the full effect, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So that's definitely something we would like to see more of, that monitoring and really finishing it off and driving it home.
So I'm hearing a common theme in our conversation with respect to small and medium-sized businesses. There's a huge gap there, it appears, for solutions, not only from a connectivity point of view, as well as an incentive point of view, I think.
Right.
So with respect to incentives, Mark and Elijah, what types of, you know, how do you view incentives? Mark, are your customers coming to the counter and saying, I need a light fixture, what can I get the most money for? What is the approach that they're taking, and what types of questions are they asking? What kind of help do they need when they come
to the counter? Yeah, incentives are massive, you know, because I think one of the really inherent issues of connected lighting is it's a harder to quantify return on investment. And like it or not, we're in a world where profitability is the essential motive of most people to do projects. And so I think that's where we can start pushing more towards that and educating that there is profitability, but you have to make the right decisions on the product and the solution that you're putting forward. So incentive helps, I think, bridge that gap between education and adoption. And we have many instances. I don't believe it's at the fully at the midstream level where we have customers coming in and buying one or two products with controls. That's still more on the luminaire side. Mm-hmm. But we have, I'd love to bring up an example. In Utah, we had a candy factory that makes like lollipops and suckers and stuff like that. And we were able to provide them a full retrofit going from metal halide to LED with a Bluetooth mesh network control system. And the cost of it was $150,000, and we were able to get them a $50,000 incentive purely on the controls package.
Wow.
So that was awesome in itself. It basically paid for the system, mm-hmm. but then it left this candy company with a ton of flexibility because they move operations around and they need to be able to program and set different light levels, set different scenes, set different schedules. And the end user is very pleased with the ease of use with the technology.
So they
probably would not have done that project had there not been an incentive. They would have just said, what's the ROI on the, you know, just the LED conversion, that's good enough. If we would have introduced controls, it would have been harder to quantify those savings immediately.
So that sounds like that was a success. That's an example of a successful project with connected controls.
Yeah.
So then I'm curious then, how did you get them to the point of thinking in terms of systems rather than just
It goes back to, you know, it was not me, it was a colleague of mine that works for Codell, which is one of our operating companies. And we approach it from a solution sales, and we approach it from, we want all the stakeholders to be involved in the process. So we talk with the contractor, we talk with the end user. They had pre-wire meetings where they sit down and explain exactly how the product is going to work, how the technology is going to be implemented, and then price it out, tackle on the incentive at the end, and that was what pushed it over the line. And now this customer is going to be able to enjoy a technology that will give them flexibility for many years. And I think that's what we've talked about before, is you get one shot at these renovation projects. Mm-hmm. It's very hard to go back and say, hey, I've got, you know, $100,000 for these lights, but now I need another $100,000 for the controls. It's very hard to ask that, you know, 3 or 4 years down the road, because you've already made that investment. So in my opinion, you have one shot to really use your investment money in the best way possible. So controls, in my opinion, is where you do that.
Excellent. Elijah, what do you see from your perspective with respect to Boston University taking advantage of incentive structures in Massachusetts? Or do you feel that you're able to take advantage of that?
So we're very lucky. We have we're kind of beyond lucky, right? We're the, you know, I'll say it out loud, the liberal elite, you know, fully moneyed, spare no expense. BU, for the first time, put has a $3 billion budget this coming fiscal, so we're not small. The largest landowner in Boston, property-wise. We have every opportunity to understand the newest utility programs. We have account engineers, account executives. We're a special type of customer called an MOU customer, or we're operating as such. But to answer your question slightly differently, incentives are not enough. And again, just a sobering kind of point here is that if the state wants to invest a lot more in HVAC and deeper energy savings, if I had $500,000 today to buy an air handler, guess how long it takes to get that air handler? It's beyond 60 weeks right now. All right, so if I want to somehow optimize an HVAC system, we're talking years from now if PO is placed today. And that has to do with everything we've talked before, supply chain issues, inflation, COVID, depending on, we're going back to COVID rules in Brookline, Massachusetts, the suburb here. So it's very impactful. And, the cost of solid state lighting, even if they are connected controls, has gone up, I'll say 50%. So whatever the old way of thinking about how to incentivize smart lighting, lighting controls, connected lighting systems, it's the pre-COVID mindset, which doesn't work today. All that needs to be reevaluated. In my view, otherwise we risk as an industry, as an ecosystem, as a community, we miss meeting our goals for sales. We miss meeting our goals for energy efficiency, for decarbonization, for environmental justice. That's my thoughts on that.
Well, that's really interesting. So you're saying that we need to begin to consider the supply chain as part of the program designs for incentive structures?
I think there's a difference. I think that the quick answer is definitely yes. I think the reality is that the best piece of legislation enacted is just missing one key ingredient, which is the practical of what's going on in the marketplace, the supply chain, the distributors, the permitting process, the codes, ability to actually implement it. In other words, can you hire a contractor, right? And all that is at a premium that the Boston area hasn't seen. I haven't seen it in my 10 or plus years of experience in the industry.
Well, that's a really good point. Thank you for sharing that. I'd like to ask the three of you, with respect to the advanced features that one can get from connected lighting using data and information and software applications, such as space optimization, to point one out. Are any of you seeing any uptake from that perspective? Are any of your customers taking advantage of the technologies to further optimize their space usage, or which then can roll into additional energy optimization as well? So are any of you seeing the adoption and the uptake of these types of technologies and software features?
Yes. Yeah. So with respect to our very large customer base, large office buildings, large schools, large museums, large customers, what we've seen is when a building is undergoing a large renovation, and they're doing it floor by floor, or they're doing it holistically altogether, one of the things we've been able to leverage and try to take advantage of as much as possible is going down a custom approach from an incentive perspective. And when we take that custom approach, we're able to maximize the amount of types of projects that can go into this incentive application. So if they're doing an air handler project, and by code, they have to put certain types of HVAC optimization and controls and different types of pumps, fans, different systems in there, distribution systems and whatnot. We're actually able to try to get them to upgrade their lighting systems as well to the best technology available to really, really drive home the savings from our perspective, but also give them the best experience as well, and going way above and beyond the code. So from that perspective, we're able to have them claim as much we're able to claim as much savings as possible, but at the same time, the project costs are so high that we're able to just really, really maximize everybody's potential there. So from our perspective, we get the maximum savings. From the customer perspective, they're getting the maximum incentive, no caps, whatnot, because from our projects in New York City, especially in our bonus period, we're up to 80% of the project cost that we're paying for. So if some of that is able to get, you know, buffered from the HVAC system and whatnot, we're able to kind of leverage that as well. So for our very, very large systems, I would say we've seen a lot of participation and, you know, been able to drive it from that perspective.
Is there any specific technology that you're seeing is of preference with respect to connected lighting systems? So with respect to, is power over Ethernet, or is it Bluetooth mesh? I mean, is there a specific?
Yeah, we really haven't seen a adoption of any one dominate. What we have seen is like, because the landscape in New York City is so specific, you know, a lot of the building owners who operate, they're going to operate lighting in a very specific way anyway. So for example, if they have like a windows that, you know, that an office building that you can see through, it's transparent. Just by nature of it, you know, they want to be able to portray that, you know, maybe on certain floors, have that sort of appearance all day and all night long, especially if it's in a prime location. So, you know, with respect to the types of controls and strategies that are implemented on top of that, there might be like some high-end trim, there might be some dimming, there might be some daylight throughout the day, but there really isn't like one specific type of, you know, connected lighting technology we've seen like really, really take over and dominate.
Interesting. Mark, do you have anything to share with respect to?
Yeah, absolutely. So we definitely have a lot of discussion around the potential of what I would call smart lighting, connected lighting, with where the light source is really the beginning of the communication and it's gathering data, like you say, with space optimization. Usually just ends there because, frankly, it's again hard to justify on a ROI basis. And it doesn't seem like we've gotten to the point right now where we have a manufacturer that can install a light fixture that can gather data, but then what do you do with that data, right? You have to have a way to sort and present that data in a meaningful way for the end user. And that doesn't seem to be addressed at this point with lighting manufacturers. And I think it's lighting is not the only technology that has that capability in a building automation environment. Mm-hmm. So I think our issue from a lighting market perspective is really having that standardization to where it's one or two types of systems that can gather that data and then present the data useful, where right now we have, I was talking with my new buddy John over there. I mean, he showed me 24 different lighting controls that are out there. So that's daunting when you're a customer looking at that and trying to make a decision. So my pitch now to customers is, you know, everybody wants to know what a lighting control system can do. And I try to reverse that and say, I want to sell you a lighting system to where you don't have to do things, where you can automate as much possible and take human input as much out of the process, but then still give flexibility to be able to change and alter the way that the space looks. But I feel like the more human interaction in a control system, the more issues that can arise. So selling a control system where you automate as much possible and take that element out of it avoids having a very expensive on-off switch, is like we like to say. You know, that's where it can lead to if it's not commissioned and automated properly. So I think we're still at that stage. The data and all the cool things that we like to talk about, we're still a little ways away from that, in my opinion.
Interesting. Elijah.
So I'd like to poll the audience here. How many folks have any background or experience or come from or involved in the controls, any kind of controls background? Who's from a controls background? Excellent. So the engineering principle, keep it simple. silly, right? The kiss. That's an apt thing from my perspective when it comes to control systems. I think that what you talked about, the complexity and the myriad sort of options in terms of technologies. That's why I'm wearing the Luna badge here. I gotta give a plug for that. I think for the manufacturers and the controls folks in, make sure that you meet up with your hardware guys and you put in guys and gals, and y'all put in an application to DLC to get your fixture approved. Because as a client, as a customer, as someone who builds, it'd really be great to just look at a quick, spec book or a manufacturer's or a distributor's website or something, and see that badge and know that when I'm buying, 100 of these, 1,000 of these, a few thousand of these, 10,000 of these, whatever these widgets are, that I have some of the key features that we're talking about, connected lighting features. So I want to talk about some of that because I think you asked a really good question, Doreen. You talked about space optimization. Right now, Boston University is building a giant building right outside of Kenmore Square. It's about 300,000 square feet. It's a showpiece. BU's president used to be the provost over at MIT. And while he was the provost at MIT, they built a very controversial / remarkable building there, the Status Center. And now that he's president at BU for 10 or 15 years, he's building another one at the Boston University campus. And it costed something $500 million plus or something like that. It's a very large number, right? But the question with space optimization is, do we really have the understanding, the analytics to even evaluate whether we absolutely need that building or not? And I think what you're going to see in a lot of commercial real estate, if you're, we're real close to the financial district, and there's an awful lot of folks working from home these days. The question I think that the Class A real estate has, the real estate investment trusts, other folks is, how can we optimize the usage of our space, right? How can we save not just on our utility bill, which is, half a percent of the budget, right? It's how can we save on our, CapEx, right? Can we reinvest? Can we give the shareholders that value that they're looking from our company? So I think space optimization is a huge question that we're trying to, envision the future. We do not do inventory control, but I understand we do a little bit with security because overlit with LEDs, a parking lot or an alleyway or something badly overlit actually impedes the high definition camera's ability to actually get a good image. You're better at lower light actually. So we do use high level trim. And also planned maintenance. We use that feature of connected lighting because we can kind of understand how many fixtures are out in our tennis and track center, for instance, where we have to build a bridge across our technical track, our technical service, which is a fast track. We have to get a condor or a lift that can go, 50 feet up in the air. And so if we can schedule some of these across campus and have some economies of scale, we're currently using those advantages of connected lighting. One last thing that I scribbled down here is we do not yet use the color tunable, circadian rhythm, and the whole well standard that's, will be in vogue in the next over the next 10 years, similarly to what LEED has done the previous 10 years. But I'm a big fan of, this is a little bit of a quip and a joke, but those lights are really bright. And it'd be great if, especially outdoor mounted lights, wall packs and things like that, were Luna approved. And so we didn't have these issues that I live in Boston have for 20 years that, we don't have so much light trespass and we can kind of cool everything down at night. So everything's not super blasting and able to be seen from space and all that other stuff. Those are some thoughts.
Great. Thank you for sharing. We're going to have to move to Q&A in a minute here, but I have one final question for the group. When we looked at the report the DOE put out a few years ago, their estimate was that under 1% of the market utilizes connected lighting. And part of our mission today is to help maybe define the future for our organization and how we can help move the needle and increase adoption. So do each of you have any thoughts about what role the DLC can play to help move the market and increase adoption of connected lighting? But we will need to keep our comments brief so we can move to Q&A. Naveed, we'll just come back to this.
Yes, absolutely. So first of all, being here this week has been very special. It's only been a day, but it's been very special. It's extremely humbling and genuine, the experience I've been here and seen. So I think we're going to need this type of education to utilities, to customers, to distributors. We need the education there to show here's exactly where we want to head to. Here are the benefits of it. Here's how we can drive decarbonization. So I think keeping it as simple as possible and having the right stakeholders in the room and ensuring that the message is consistent, clear, and genuine as we're doing here today, I think that's going to be a primary way of going forward.
Great. Thank you.
Yeah, I'll keep it short. I mean, that's standardization, and that's oversimplifying a very complex issue, but I think that's needed desperately in this control environment. And then I'd say if DLC has involvement, is be more selective on who participates in that. Really be harder on that standardization policy and make it really vetted out, make it really, you know, with the interoperability and the, there's nothing worse than when you see a project where you got three or four different manufacturers with three or four different sources of where it's coming from, knowing that there's going to be a problem that's going to happen, especially with the controls. And that's just inevitable. Then our spot is how do we insert ourselves to minimize the problems and then address them when they arise. But the problems will arise when you have multiple fixtures, multiple control packages or whatever the case may be. So I would say standardization.
Excellent. Thank you. Elijah?
I'm all out of fresh, smart ideas, so I'm just going to steal Mark's at first. I think absolutely keep it simple. You heard me talk about that. And in slash standardization, check. Totally agree. And Naveed, I completely agree with you. Partnering with the utility, to back up a minute, keep it simple. If the DLC was able to have some kind of vendor, like the top simplest, you know, control systems and some sort of educational at these things, I think that would be something you could do. Partner with the utilities in terms of education, I think is specifically what Naveed said. I completely agree that workforce training and not just training of the workers who show up to install this stuff and maintain it, right, which is extremely important. But I think also with the utilities, the person straight out of, I'm going to make it up. Don't mean to act disparagingly here, sound disparaging here, but the smart, bright student who studied English Lit and is now working for the utilities door-to-door at small businesses, they have to be well trained by the utilities to understand the program so that they can, their outreach to the customers can be effective. And that, to me, really is workforce training. So I'd say two things. Keep it simple, standardization, and training and education, absolutely.
Great, yeah, thank you all, that's wonderful. Well, we have a few minutes left for some questions from the group. We can do our best with the blinding light to see hands, so Bernadette, if you could help with that, that would be great, thank you.
Hey, Mark.
Hey.
This is Jim with Silver. You mentioned ROI a couple times. And when Doreen asked the last question about market adoption, you kind of veered off into standardization, which I think is a very good point. But you did mention ROI. So I'm kind of curious as to your thoughts on where that's breaking down. And here's where I'm coming from. So there, with connected lighting, there are quite a few well-documented research papers or white papers coming out of like DOE or NEEA that in pretty good detail talk about connected lighting and talk about the benefits and particularly how much energy can be saved by using it, right? So when you're developing your ROI, and like you said, you're in the trenches, right? So you're putting these projects together, you're recommending solutions and so on and so forth. So when you're putting that ROI together, where's it breaking down? Is it breaking down? So I connected lighting is energy efficiency and all those benefits, and it's data, right?
Sure.
So where is it breaking down in terms of you developing an effective ROI for a particular client?
Yeah, great question. So a customer, typically, if you hand them a sheet of a booklet of the energy study, the first thing they're going to do is just flip to the last page and look at the bottom number and say, it's 2 years, great, we'll do the project. And then anything after that is a really tough sell job. And so I think I think where inherently controls become complex is it's not all just the energy savings. There's a lot of benefits outside of that that are really hard to quantify. So lack of a better word. So then it becomes, we don't really need that because of X, Y, Z. And I'd rather worry about right now where I'm, as the end user, I'm judged on how successful I am with implementing this project in the real time. And so I'd say it's a long way to answer your question. It's about education. It's about really getting the end user to be a part of the solution rather than just selling it based on energy savings. So it's tough, and that's where I think standardization plays a role, because then it's a little bit more accessible and it's not too confusing, and it's not, it seems to be more open to further investment with it, whereas some of it feels like, gosh, if I make this one investment, it could cost my job if I get it wrong. So I'd rather back up and go, what are the facts that I know are easily quantifiable, and it's energy savings, and that's a simple calculation, right? So Jim, hope that answered your question.
Jim, I'm reasonably familiar with the industry, and I don't know what you're talking about, actually, so just my own naivete. After this, can you maybe send a link to Doreen or something to get that out of there, that information out there? Because I think that's an important piece, trying to figure out how to sell. And if there's white papers that exist that DOE is in, that typical projects or typical applications, and it's, vetted out, I think those types of articles and, papers can help sell projects. So I'm just asking if you could, connect.
Yeah, likewise.
Yeah. And sorry, can I jump on that?
Sure.
I don't want to monopolize everyone's time, but one thing I didn't talk about connected features is, depending on the application, you can definitely have lower cost of install, Jim. So when it comes to this connected lighting, energy efficiency and data you mentioned specifically, but depending on how your system on the retrofit is currently zoned, for instance, you can make virtual zones without having to do a lot of rerunning conduit and wire and all that. So you can actually reduce your costs, and that plays into the ROI question that you had. So,
and I'll add one thing I meant to say, sorry, it's kind of on the quantifiable. A lot of customers will discount any kind of savings measures that you try to implement in the ROI calculation for occupancy, because it's hard to even know what the occupancy is going to be. So I've found some customers are willing to accept that percentage reduction, but it's still, that's tough. Where if fully educated, you could really maximize not using light in spaces where people don't need light, right? That's the whole goal of controls.
I'll make mine quick because it seems we're coming at the end of time, but along with Jim's question, we have a lot of lighting experience in this room, but I think what we may be missing is controls really affects the building automation HVAC side as well. And that's part of the ROI that I think a lot of us in this room, and I think at Sonepar maybe, right, like we don't talk about. And from a utility, from a Con Ed perspective, you have the luxury of being both electric and gas, can offer both. So I'm curious, when you go to see customers, you said you had some outreach. How many of those people are you talking to about the building automation connect or interoperability and the savings on the gas side as well?
So it certainly is something that we are going more into in this day and age. However, it hasn't been something that we've been doing, you know, historically speaking. And I say that because now more so than ever, so, you know, we use these standard approaches in the TRM for energy savings, and that's our easy way to kind of bring projects in, process them in a cost-effective manner. However, what you're talking about going down on the gas side of things, looking at interactive effects, how that might be affecting a heating system, that's something in which, you know, we accept it from a custom perspective, but it's something in which we would need some more research into. And for our larger customers where energy models are possible, we do that, and we certainly accept them. And we're looking at all these various systems, their interactive effects, their end uses, and we absolutely incentivize it from that perspective. But it's very difficult for us, for all of our customers, to go ahead and expect them to be able to do something like that. But we certainly are, you know, laying the groundwork now to be able to do that. We do have some initiatives that we are working with our strategic energy partners and trying to understand how they're operating and what those interactive effects look like, so we can maybe capitalize on the gas side and oil side and delivered fuel side of things as well. But that's kind of like where we are right now with it.
That's great. Let's have one more. I think we have time for one more question if we can. I know, but let's just have one more question. Thank you.
Thank you.
So I'm just taking back my few minutes that the MC took from me, that's all.
I think my question is primarily for Mark, but if anyone else wants to jump in, that works too. So given the supply chain issues that are occurring and with DLC 5.1 rolling out this summer, are there any areas of concern about increased product availability issues if incentive programs transition to only accepting 5.1 product?
Wow, I was hoping you wouldn't ask any supply chain questions. No. Yeah, no, that's a tough one. It's something that we're all struggling with. I would say, not to cop out of the answer, but where we are kind of in the trenches, we're a little bit closer to the project, you know, in real time. So that's not as a concern for us as it is probably with the manufacturers, to being able to have products available to distributors. By the time it reaches our inventory, we're selling it with or without an incentive, right? And so, but it is I think our big challenge now is, do you overorder and try to beef up your inventory? But then what happens if all that comes at one time and then we have tons of inventory? So that's a big challenge that we're looking into, we're working with, but it doesn't affect us as much on the DLC side.